Welcome to Photoactive, a podcast about photography and technology. I'm Kirk McElhern.
And I'm Jeff Carlson.
Today, we are very happy to welcome back a repeat guest, Nick Bott of Gentleman Coders. Nick, I think we've had you on the show three or four times, and you're here to talk about your new app, Nitro. Thanks for joining us again, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to Nitro, we want to talk about the news that broke, I guess this morning, my time. Canva, which is this website-based design image editing tool, bought the company Serif, which makes Affinity Photo, Affinity Publisher, and I think they have another app, Affinity Designer, right. And so they are sort of like Photoshop apps, like, well, Adobe apps like Photoshop and Illustrator. They sort of fill in the same need, but without a subscription, and they're not part of the Adobe industrial complex. And so they have garnered a lot of users over the years. It's kind of weird because I don't know a lot about Canva. I know a little bit about it from researching how people use it to create covers for ebooks, for example. And they have templates and design is really quick and easy. I kind of don't understand why a web-based service like that is buying desktop apps. Do either of you have any ideas?
There are a lot of people who are wanting to use professional tools, not just web-based tools, that do not want to use Adobe. And I think for those reasons you said, because of subscriptions, not being locked into the ecosystem, I mean, even, you know, what is it? Like, it's been like 10 years or something since Adobe went subscriptions, and there are people who are still upset about that. So this gives them a piece of the professional market. I don't think they're, you know, intending to, you know, beat Adobe at their own game, but it's probably a big enough slice that it's going to make it worth it for them.
Nick, what do you think?
You know, I'm not sure. I think that what Jeff's saying makes a lot of sense. You know, I read the press release, I read the FAQ, and I feel unqualified to comment on where they're going. I mean, it sounds like what they're trying to do is like, well, Canva has this and we don't, and we have this and they don't, and that makes a lot of sense together. You know, it's really hard to know what's really going on behind the scenes.
I don't see that much overlap. I'm looking at the Canva website, and it's basically designed. It's not really for photo editing. It's for design. I'll give you an example. Their pro plan is for individual solopreneurs and freelance designers who want unlimited access to premium content. So if you need lots of stock photos, and you can even make them with AI, and you need lots of images and fonts and all that, you can get them really easily. It's not for photographers who are going to be editing photos, I don't think.
No, but it's for the people who are not photographers and not necessarily image editors, and their bosses say, look, we need a card, we need an ad, we need something, and we're not going to go to an outside designer or an outside photographer. So here, go to the site, make this happen, and then this gives them more of those tools. I also wanted to point out that we talked about this before we recorded. Nick used the word unqualified, and we don't allow that here because we're podcasters. And because we're podcasters, we have opinions on everything and we're always right. Is that how this works?
Our credentials on every subject are impeccable.
Because what they're saying is Canva doesn't have professional design tools, which Affinity obviously has. And Affinity doesn't have the cloud or collaboration stuff, which Canva has, and also, to you know, your point, Adobe has. So if they can leverage some of the things that Canva provides, that might give them something in terms of competing better with Adobe.
Yeah. I also think that buying the Serif apps gives them a really great ramp for all of the people that are currently using Canva who say, I need something more. I need something that will do more. I want to learn more rather than just be dealing with templates. And they can say, well, look at this. We have these very professional, well-regarded tools right here. So I think that would be favorable for both of them.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of very professional, well-regarded tools, we are all looking at Nitro today, which is, you know, this is kind of like the photo editor that I wanted because it interfaces so well with Apple Photos. And I've talked about Photomator, the sub-Pixelmator app recently. And I don't see why I shouldn't be able to do that with an outside editor. And I like the fact that Nitro, when I open it, here's my whole library. I can do everything. It's as if I know that some people, they have so many photos that they want to segregate them or they want to put them someplace. For me, I want to edit my photos and I want them to be available on all my Apple devices. And in the past, you could open editors such as Raw Power using that little menu on the top and do an edit and it would do a sort of back and forth. But now that whole thing has been simplified. When did this occur that allowed you to make this app that directly reads the Photos app, edit, and then convert and move back and forth without that intermediary that users used to see?
So that's a good question. There have been a couple of stages along the way. So on iOS, it's been possible for a long time for apps to integrate with the photo library to varying degrees. It started out with you would just get a photo picker. You could pick an image and then make a new image. That's kind of how it started. And it's been getting better and better. On the Mac, that didn't really exist at all until macOS Catalina, when they added the ability for third-party apps like mine to integrate with and read the photo library. So before that, then we were limited to photo extensions, which is what you were describing, which is you have to go into Photos,
right,
pick edit, go to a menu, pick a thing, and you can only work on one image at a time. It's very painstaking. It's a lot of steps. When they added the ability to integrate directly with the photo library, that was in Catalina. So Raw Power does have that ability since that version. And so that's been a big win for everybody, because being able to actually read and write the library really makes the workflows for dealing with lots of images or sequence of images much, much easier. The other thing that it does is, because Apple provides actual services to third-party apps, we're not messing around with the library, the database, and we're not making, you know, SQL calls and all kinds of crazy things. They're saying, okay, this is how you, here's a call to make an album. This is a call to read an image. You know, we're going to give you that stuff in a way that's safe. So the library is always going to maintain its integrity. So that combination of effects allows us to have third-party apps that can safely and effectively work with your library.
It's really smooth, and it feels like, it almost feels like, imagine if you could access your iTunes library with a third party, I say iTunes, a music app library with a third party app, and see the same thing, but in a different interface with different features. That's what it feels like. And it feels like this is what we should have had with Photos for a long time. And I understand Apple wanting control over that Photos library, because it is, to a user, it looks monolithic inside its files and folders. And if changes are made, it could corrupt the library. But I guess we've gotten to the stage where that library is stable enough that they're not worried. As you say, they've created calls to allow other apps to do things that they couldn't do before.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think that they have gotten to a point where they're able to provide that access. Unfortunately, it's not as much access as I would like, or as people expect. So I think there's an expectation that if I can do something in Photos, I can do it in a third-party app. And unfortunately, Apple has been honestly quite slow to make advancements to the what's called PhotoKit, to PhotoKit as they've advanced the photo app itself. So there's a number of things that I would love to be able to do that I can't do because Apple's not provided that ability, even though Photos itself has. So there's this tension where Photos has features which I don't have, and I have features that they don't have. And, you know, there's a little bit of a back and forth there. I think over time, I'm hoping we get to a place where these can be as independent a front end as possible. But we're kind of a little bit, you know, in between right now.
So what's special about Nitro compared to Raw Power, your previous app? How is it different other than this, the way it's accessing files?
Right. Well, so Nitro is a complete ground up implementation of a photo app. So, and I can get to why I did that later, but the biggest things about it is I took the best parts of Raw Power, which was its ability to work with the photo library and its ability to work with the file system. So you can manage your images either way. You don't have to be a Photos user. if you manage your images in the photo library, which in the file system, which a lot of people do, then the app feels the same. So it's not like you have these different worlds. The UI is very similar. The features are exactly the same, basically. And so you can manage your images how you like. And then the other thing I did is I revamped the entire user interface. So it's cleaner, it's newer, it's fresher, it's easier to use. It feels, you know, very much like what modern photo applications should look like in terms of, you know, the interface, the controls, everything. It's configurable, you know, all that kind of thing. The next big thing that, so a lot of this was driven by getting feedback from customers. So I get emails all the time, obviously, from people asking for certain very specific things. And as we'll get to, you know, raw power just can't do those kinds of things. So a new platform, I needed to make a new platform to make that possible. And one of those things was masking. So that was just a, you know, constant request from people was brushing, masking, all that kind of stuff. So you could work on portions of your image. So I want to work on just the, you know, just the face or just the sky or just this background or just whatever. I need to do things like cloning or, you know, remove wires, you know, that sort of thing. And so all of that technology is significant and requires a more advanced engine. So Nitro has very advanced masking. So it's got things like cloning and wire removal. It's got brushing. It's got gradients. It's got AI-based masks. So you can just, you know, tell it, oh, give me a mask of the person in the foreground or, you know, the background. It's got brushes that follow contours. So you don't have to do a lot of really careful, you know, messing around trying to get the edge of something. It'll just follow the edge for you. So the masking was a really big advancement in terms of Nitro over raw power. And then there's a lot of other things, like, for example, NUP. So you can view multiple images simultaneously in the app and zoom them. So you can zoom on a Mac up to 16 images simultaneously, pan and zoom them, edit them. There's a compare mode, which is similar to the aperture compare mode. So if you have a burst of images, you can easily walk through them and pick the best one. So all of these things are the kinds of features that people have been asking for in raw power. And I've built them in this new app, Nitro, because that's the foundation I needed to provide them.
Gotcha. So it wasn't a matter of being able to just bolt on a lot of these features. Obviously, like I'm, as I say quite often, I'm not a software engineer, but I've worked with a lot of apps where the developers really have started from scratch because it would be so much work to try to graft these other things onto the core that was there that it just becomes easier. I mean, for example, I have two examples in mind. One, Skylum with Luminar. They've like rebuilt their engine a couple of times, and they every time they say, "Well, it's because the core engine couldn't do what we wanted it to do, so we had to build something new." But then you also look at Lightroom, where Adobe built Lightroom, the Lightroom CC. I think because it needed a modern code base and the stuff that ties into the cloud and all of that. But because there are so many people who use Lightroom Classic, they are having to bolt things on and sort of like rebuild it from inside out. But again, they're also Adobe. They have more than a couple of developers and they can do that. Like at what point did you realize, all right, I can't go as far as I want with raw power and I need to just start over? Because I imagine that's a daunting task ahead.
Yeah, it really is. And I think you've captured a lot of the challenges really well. So, I mean, I've been working on Nitro for over 2 years. So it's been going on for a long time. And there's a time before that when I was trying to decide what did I want to do to your point. And so if we wind back a little bit, so raw power has actually been on the market since 2016. So that's a long time.
Wow.
And back then, things were really different, and it's hard to really even remember all of it, but I'll give you some examples. So when I shipped raw power, Mac apps and iOS apps were separate things, not just from an engineering standpoint, from a store standpoint. When you make an app on the App Store, you have to give it a unique identifier. And on the App Store at that time, Mac apps and iOS apps had to have different identifiers. They had different, basically, slots in the store. So you couldn't have a single app that was basically, you know, bought and managed on both platforms. That just wasn't a thing that was possible. Interestingly, now it's inverted. It's almost impossible to do that. When you make an app, it's going to have the same identifier in both Mac and iOS. So Apple has made these kind of behind the scenes changes, which actually make significant have a significant impact on developers like me, right? So we've gone from these are separate worlds to now these should really be the same thing. There's an expectation nowadays that if you buy an app on one platform, you get it on all the other platforms. That was not the case in 2016. Apple back then was doing lots of stuff with OpenGL, and they had just moved to this new thing called Metal, which is their graphics platform. And you know, raw power is built primarily in OpenGL. I added Metal later, but it's always been a challenge to manage these two things. I mean, that's core to how pixels appear on the screen. I mean, that's not the kind of thing that you want to really be, you know, switching back and forth on, right? Apple has changed the programming language that we use. So we've always worked in this thing called Objective-C. And Apple's been moving everybody to this new language called Swift. You can still use the old stuff, but as Apple produces new APIs and new technologies, it's getting harder and harder to do things using Objective-C. They want you to be using Swift, and some things are not even available to people using the old language. Apple has changed the UI. When they went to this Big Sur, right, they changed the user interface. You know, for example, there, they've added a lot of more advanced UI to iPads, you know. So the language has changed, the UI has changed, the graphics model has changed, the store model has changed. We know Apple's been pushing developers away from, you know, towards subscriptions and towards in-app purchases and towards all these other things. So there's been, at a certain point, I'm feeling that raw power, as it's designed and built, is going to be left behind in terms of trying to take advantage of the things that Apple is, you know, encouraging us to take advantage of. And as a small developer, I need to kind of go where Apple wants me to go, right? I don't have the ability to build something that's generic that's going to run on, you know, every platform, and I can just ignore all those things. What I need to do is, how can I be the best citizen on Apple platforms? And that's leveraging Apple's technology and not fighting it or not being left behind. So there was all of that. And at the same time, because the apps were built independently, the raw power for Mac and iOS were built separately, I mean, by me, but separately, because they had to be, new features were getting harder and harder to add because I have to add them essentially twice, right? I've got to do it. There's only so much code that can realistically be shared under those circumstances. So that's all of that's kind of in the background. The stuff that Apple has added more recently also only runs on newer OS versions, and a standard thing that they have. But I have a lot of customers who run older OS versions for a variety of reasons. There are a lot of people who run Mojave, and that's because that's like the last version that could run certain types of software, right? So people are still running Mojave. Really? I think it's the last one with 32-bit support, I think, as well, I think.
Oh, that makes sense.
So there's those apps that only run there. And so I'm stuck there too, where if I want to take advantage of all these new technologies, I'm going to have to move to a new operating system version. But if that happens, I have to drop ones that people are currently using. And that's going to be a problem. I don't want to leave my customers behind. Raw power runs on, you know, Mojave and later. It runs on older devices. And so I can't lose that either. So if I don't want to take anything away from people using raw power, but I need to move forward, you know, what do I do? And it seemed like the best thing to do was to build something new that was separate. And of course, also, while I'm doing that, I have to move raw power forward. So you could say, well, why don't you just call it that thing, but build something new? And it's, well, first of all, I'd have to at some point drop these old operating systems. But also, there's a certain feeling of, rebuilding an airplane while it's in flight.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that either. So got to keep those things separate and move them forward.
There's definitely an advantage I would expect from having something new in terms of also just having recurring revenue and getting people to upgrade. Because if you were just to say, here's raw power, I can't remember what the version number is. Here's raw power 10. And, we've built it all up. And I would imagine there'd be a certain number of people who'd be like, oh, yeah, well, I paid for raw power in 2016. So this should be free because it's just the same app. And from my point of view, it looks a little different and it does a couple new things. But like, I've already paid my whatever it was, $40 way back then, that's lasted me for almost 10 years. So I would guess that there's also that marketing aspect of it too, that sense of, oh, right, developers need to make a living, I think is what it's called.
That's what it's called. And so I think building a new app is actually the best thing for existing customers who are running on old operating systems, or it just meets their needs perfectly. And I know people are continuing to use and buy raw power because it does its job really well. It's also good for new customers who get the things that they're going to want to have. It's good for people who want to migrate to this new technology but don't need – maybe they – it's something that they must have or they want to have, and it's better for me. So it helps out, I think, everybody. So nobody loses anything in this process. I have a new product. And so, yes, it's a new product, and then people can buy that, and that certainly helps my business.
One thing I like is the ability to access folders from the file system. And I mentioned Photomator. They do that, too, with a recent update. I have a workflow that most people don't use. I don't import all my photos into the Photos app or anything like that. I import them into the Finder. Then I go through them and decide which ones I want to edit. Then I move them into my editing tool. So what I like is that I can open files from my file system, choose the ones to edit, make the edits, and export them into the Photos library with all the edits, with all the metadata, with everything. And instead of what I used to do would be use Quick Look in the Finder, and I'd maybe mark a green Finder tag on photos I wanted to copy, and then I'd drag them. And this is so much smoother. And it's also great if you want to go back in an archive of photos in your Finder that you haven't put into the Photos library and go through them and see if there's any you want to keep.
Exactly. And that's one of the really powerful new features in Nitro is exactly what you said, where not only can you choose the file system or the photo library, but you can use them together in a really intelligent manner. So what you do actually is actually not unusual at all. People, for things like iCloud storage reasons, they might have a smaller iCloud photo library, but they still want it synchronized across their devices. So what they do is they put maybe just their best images there. And so what they'll do is they'll work in the Finder, in Nitro, for example, and they'll do things like rate them, edit them, do whatever, and then they want to get them into the photo library. Now, the way raw power works and other apps are going to work is they will make a JPEG or whatever, and maybe they'll put the rating and stuff, but they'll burn that new image and they'll put that now in the photo library. But now you've basically sort of separated those things out. You've got your original with all the stuff you did to it non-destructively, and you've got this now JPEG or whatever sitting in your photo library. But Nitro works differently. What it does is it will send the original to Photos along with all of the rating and editing instructions. The non-destructive information will go into the photo library. So now if you go into Photos, it's like you had actually done all the work in Photos. It's all there. You can keep working on it. That's great. There's no extra, there's no JPEG that's the now representation of it. And vice versa. If you're in Photos and you want to get it out, you can get it from Photos into the file system. And what it will do is make an XMP sidecar. So now you've got an XMP sidecar. It's got your ratings and your non-destructive editing data stored in a text file next to your original. So you can go both ways and leverage both of those storage and workflows.
What editing tools does Nitro have that Photos doesn't have?
Well, it's got all of that masking stuff. So it's got the ability to do the brushes and the gradients, and it's got the cloning tools. The curves feature in Nitro is much more powerful than the one that's in Photos. So it gives you a lot more control over the curve. So you can work with a luminance curve. And that actually gives you a really nice effect versus just working on it the way people normally do with RGB. So you get a more advanced, more powerful curve. It's got more controls. It's got the ability to, you know, enter in numbers and stuff like that. It's got split toning. It's got a channel mixer. It's got a lot of really nice, simple enhancement tools. One of the biggest things it has, though, over Photos is it actually has true RAW editing. So Photos can open a RAW and it can let you edit it, but it first doesn't give you any of the RAW adjustment sliders and parameters that are actually available. They just hide all of that stuff. So if you want to work on, for example, a Pro RAW file, you need the tone map slider, and Photos doesn't even have that. If you want to bring back overexposed data in your RAW file because it's overexposed, but you want to bring that detail back in, you can't do that in Photos. Photos does not even have that ability. So if you shoot RAW images, then Nitro gives you very special tools for RAW editing that Photos doesn't give you at all, lets you accomplish things you cannot accomplish in Photos, like, for example, bring back overexposed data. And then the individual tools themselves have more features than ones that have the same names in Photos. The other thing I wanted to mention that's different about Photos and other apps from Nitro is camera support. And so camera support is a huge problem right now. Apple, through their RAW decoder, provides support for a lot of cameras, hundreds of cameras. But the rate at which cameras are being added for new cameras has gotten really, really slow. So people have been waiting months and sometimes years waiting for their cameras to be supported, or Apple supports part of the camera. So for example, Fujifilm cameras come with regular and compressed formats, and Apple has never supported the compressed format. So a lot of people's images just don't even work in Photos, but they work in Nitro. So what I've managed to do is come up with a way to leverage Apple's RAW decoder while adding cameras that Apple doesn't support. And in fact, in RAW Power, and it's coming in Nitro, I just added support for Nikon's newest compression. So the latest Nikon cameras come with a new type of high quality compression called HE and HE Star. And Apple doesn't support that, but RAW Power now supports that. And the next update of Nitro is going to have that too. So a lot of people are now kind of blocked trying to get their new camera to work with their computer, and it just doesn't happen anymore. But Nitro has that ability. You can even put the images into Photos. Photos shows you a little, you know, gray square, but you view that same image in Nitro and there it is. You've got the image and you can edit it.
And it's not that Nitro does this magically. It's that you do the work, that you examine files from the cameras to be able to support them.
Right. There's a whole process I go through to support a new camera so that, you know, it looks correct and it gets all the metadata and all that kind of stuff happens in that process. And then it's got to be hooked into the rest of Nitro and the editing system so that you can do anything you want to with, you know, a compressed Fujifilm or a, you know, Nikon or the latest Olympus camera or whatever it is. Just like you would if it was a camera that Apple was supporting.
If I look at Apple's support document, digital camera RAW file supported by iOS 16, iPadOS 16, and macOS Ventura. Well, it's already out of date because it says 23rd of May, 2023. But I noticed things like it doesn't support the camera that the internet is going crazy over, the Fuji X106.
The X106 is actually a really good example. It's a brand new camera, just like you said. So the page you're looking at, by the way, is the iOS 16 one. They have an iOS 17 page. So each operating system, they produce a new page. But you are 100% correct. That new Fuji, that X106, is not supported by Apple. And at some point, you know, they may get there. Apple hasn't stopped supporting cameras, but it's going to take a while. And RAW Power actually, I shipped it just a few days ago with support for that camera. So I try very hard to stay on top of new cameras, new formats. And so, you know, that X106 will, the 6 or is it VI?
They six. Call it the yeah. 6, which, you know, I was thinking, we did an episode on this recently. I was thinking, if it's 106, why is it just not 106? Or if they want the VI, why isn't it CVI? That's a marketing problem.
Well, it's confusing. It's confusing because they have the X100F and the S and the T.
Here's the totally illogical reason. The X100 was the first. The X100S was the second, S for second, T for third, F for fourth. Now, they'd already used F, so they couldn't use it for the fifth, so they used the V. They'd already used S, so they couldn't use it for the sixth one. So, I mean, from a marketing standpoint, that's totally, you know, bonkers.
Wow. I would not have ever guessed that. Yep. Okay. Oh, wow.
Let our listeners know that Nick just basically fell back in his chair with his hands on his head.
Wow. Okay. So that new camera will be supported maybe one day by Apple, but it's already supported by Raw Power, and Nitro will come out very soon with that same support. So nice. Camera support's a huge deal for photographers, and it's a big part of what makes Nitro a good app for, you know, a lot of people is that ability to get great editing features with an even wider range of cameras.
Two questions about people who own Raw Power. I assume that they can just import all their images from Raw Power into Nitro?
Yeah, so there's two parts to that. If they're using the photo library, because the photo library stores all that information just in the, you know, database of the library, if you have a Raw Power edited image and you open and you, you know, pick it or open it in Nitro for editing, it reads the editing information directly and you just keep going. So it's fully non-destructive. If you, you know, applied a curve or something in Raw Power in the photo library and you open it in Nitro, that curve is right there. You can keep working on it. So there's no JPEG, there's no anything. If you're using the file system, then what happens is, and this is one of the reasons, you know, for the move to Nitro is the way Raw Power stores the editing information is it stores it in kind of like a sidecar, but it's not a sidecar that's directly next to the original. And that's been a problem for people who want to, you know, move from machine to machine or, you know, just manage their images and their metadata. Nitro is completely XMP based for the file system. So, and that was the kind of thing that was going to be really, really, really hard to move Raw Power from. You're crossing the streams at that point. When you're using Raw Power with the file system, the latest versions of Raw Power come with an export to XMP sidecar. And so what that does is it pulls the rating and the editing data into an XMP sidecar, puts it next to the original. Raw Power doesn't look at that. So you're exporting it. But Nitro reads that, and again, all that data is there, and you're off and running.
Okay, one other point. If you're a Raw Power user, you can get a discount on the Mac App Store. This is a subscription-based app with monthly and annual and lifetime purchases. I like apps that have lifetime purchases. I don't like paying more upfront knowing it's an app I'm going to use and not having to see those subscription reminders every year.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And the way I decided to work with Nitro is different from what the way other apps tend to work. So apps tend to fall in a couple of categories. There's a pay for it upfront, which is how Raw Power works. And the problem with that is that there's no good way of doing a trial. So Apple doesn't work very well. You can have a trial and then an in-app purchase, which is how Nitro works. That's that you can do. But what most apps nowadays do is they do that thing, which I don't think anybody likes, where you get a quote unquote free trial, but it's you're signing up for a subscription and boy, you better be on your toes, right? So, I mean, in fact, some of these trials are like 3 days. It's you've got to be on top of things. And I don't like that as a consumer, and I'm not going to do that as a business person. It doesn't feel good to me. So the Nitro model is actually kind of different. The way it works is you start with a free trial, but there's no signing up for anything. You don't sign up for a subscription. It doesn't cost you anything. You do have to go to the App Store and pay zero for something, but that's an Apple rule. So you go to the App Store, you pay zero, you get your free trial. It unlocks the entire application for a week. Now, at the end of that week, you then get choices. So you get basically three choices. One choice is, you know what? I'm not ready to make any decision. So I'm just going to, it's going to switch into basically like a read-only mode. You can still view all your stuff. You can export things. You just can't keep working on things. Okay. So you've ended your trial, but there's no charge and there's nothing you've signed up for. Your other choices are you can buy it outright, or you can sign up for a subscription. And I actually ordered that differently, right? I ordered differently from the way that you did, Kirk, because I really believe that a lot of people want to do exactly what you want to do, which is they want to try the app out. And then if they like it, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to invest in this once. So I think actually a lot of people want to do that. And I wanted to make that easy. If you use the other route, which a lot of companies do, they'll say, sign up for the subscription, then cancel it, then go and buy. It's like, I don't want to do that. There's a certain amount of just complexity, and I may forget. And now I've paid the annual thing, and now I've also paid the lifetime thing. I paid extra. Now I don't know what to do. I don't want to do any of that for people. You get a trial, then you make a choice, and there's no charge along the way. So for people who are going to use the app a lot, then it's really straightforward for them to do the trial and then buy the app. If they feel like they want to try it a little longer, fine. Do the trial, and then you sign up for like a monthly subscription. It's just a couple of bucks. And then you decide when you want that to end. And if you think you're going to use it maybe less frequently, then the subscription is much cheaper for less use. If you're only going to use it occasionally, then just get it for a month or even a year. That's much less. So The rental approach works if you're not going to use it much. The single purchase works if you're going to buy it, you know, use it a lot, but nothing forces you down a road.
Okay, so Nitro is available for the Mac now. This episode is going to be released, I believe, on the 5th of April, and we'll be a couple weeks away from Nitro for iOS coming out. Is that it?
Right. So it's only out for Mac right now because I wanted to get it in people's hands and get some feedback while I put the finishing touches on the iOS version. So that's going to come out soon. I don't know exactly when. It just depends on how long it takes to fix those remaining bugs. But I should point out that anything you buy on the Mac, you get the iOS version for free and vice versa. So it's a single purchase.
Ah, good point. Okay. See, this is what you were saying earlier about how there's a single identifier for apps. And can developers choose whether it's a single purchase or not?
Sort of. I mean, as I said, Apple makes it more difficult to do that nowadays. When you make a new app, it's assumed that it's going to be the same listing on both. So I haven't looked into ways of making that split because from my standpoint, that's the expectation people have. And so I'm just going to go down that road. So,
yeah.
So you, whatever you buy on whatever platform, you can install it on everything. And it's just the one cost, one charge.
Okay. Nick Bott from Gentleman Coders. Thank you very much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to PhotoActive. You can find show notes, including any photos we discuss in this episode, at photoactive.co. That's photoactive.co. We couldn't afford the M. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/photoactivecast. That's photoactivecast in one word. You can subscribe to PhotoActive in your favorite podcast app or on Apple Podcasts. See the links on our website. And think about leaving us a rating or review in iTunes or in your podcast app.